League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This is the Goalkeepers Union Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union Podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the cap-wearing voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
Yep, very good, very good. Although, actually, I have to say, a little tired this morning. I've been on an airport run, the classic early morning airport run, so little sleep for me. I'm feeling it just a tad.
Oh, yeah, it's bright and early for you, isn't it, right now? 6 a.m., that's the time that you get up. Well, in fact, you've obviously been up earlier than that.
Yes, a lot earlier. So it's still dark here, believe it or not.
But anything for the listeners.
Anything for the listeners and you, but the cap-wearing voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee. It's that time of the year, isn't it? That wonderful time, although I imagine you would vehemently disagree with the fact that it is the wonderful time of the year here in England. But we are at a place where spring has almost sprung. There are clear blue skies, a glimmer of sun in that sky, which unfortunately sometimes can impede a goalkeeper. And this weekend we saw, as we tend to do at this time of the year, see goalkeepers wearing caps, some never actually for the entirety of the game, some for maybe a half, but some for about 5 minutes until they decide that they don't like it and chuck it back in their net.
Caps a lot less popular now than they used to be. Kind of, you think of goalkeepers back in the day, you had a few that were very much cap wearing goalkeepers, but I was always a little bit unsure on caps for the fact that I kind of felt like it made sense in that, of course, keeps the sun out of your eyes. But the moment the sun then does hit your eyes, it makes it worse than actually just having the sun in your eyes the whole time. Always remember playing at Charlton in particular. That was the worst stadium for sun in your eyes. And like, fans will never fully appreciate this, but where you've got the sun coming like in the corner of the stadium, literally blinding you as you're playing the entire game. And it's so tough to read any kind of through ball or what have you. But yeah, a few still do tend to don a cap, but very rarely does it actually stay on for the whole game. I think most just do the same thing and ditch it after about 5 minutes.
You are, of course, a man who knows a lot about caps. Did you ever wear your own cap?
We did.
Or your own blend of caps?
We did produce a cap back in the day. And
what, specifically for goalkeepers?
No, just a cap. I had the brand that the goalkeeper coaching brand that we have, GK Icon, I had a GK Icon branded cap, which I did wear in a couple of games. But again, lasted 5 minutes.
On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're going to whiz through this podcast, Richard, because I believe you have a golf date. Is that correct?
We do. It's this time of the year. The window's closed. Things are a little bit calmer. Got a couple of clients over, a couple of colleagues over. So it is very much we have a golf week once a week. Once a year. If I had it every week, that would be the life. But no, once a year we have a golf week, and it is this week. So this will be short and sharp because of that. However, of course, the quality of this pod will not be diminished.
Of course, it will not. We'll start at Villa Park then, where the goalkeeping woes continue for Chelsea, and Philip Jorgensen conceding both the goals, of course, and the winner scored by Marco Asensio, just spilling underneath the body of the Swede/Dane.
Yeah, tough moment for him. Look, obviously, towards the end of a game, you know, obviously we're seeing, you see more and more errors for different reasons. This is one that, of course, you'll be frustrated with. Quite a simple one in terms of the feedback on it. And no doubt when the coaches are looking at it and talking about it in isolation, it is just simply a case of not twisting the hands. You know, it's that technique, whether you go with the scoop technique, whether you collapse down to your left and turn the hands. And obviously, look, it all happens very quickly. Initially, he's obviously thought that he could go with that technique. And of course, you've got nothing behind it. Now, if you collect it, then great. But it's a very awkward situation to find yourself in when your hands are down, trying to scoop, nothing behind it. You can't actually, it's very tough to gather it using this technique. And look, it is quite a simple one. It's one that, of course, you'll be frustrated. At the same time, it is very close in. I think that naturally, people look at it, it's a bad error, people will question it. And at the same time, even if you turn the hands, it's still very tough to gather the ball when it's a shot from 5-6 yards, it's coming in at pace. It's still a tough ball to deal with, but ultimately he just went with the wrong technique. And it was a shame because I think up until that moment, it had a good game. But again, you know, we talk about this so often and we've seen a couple of situations like this recently where you can effectively go from probably an 8 out of 10, if that doesn't happen, to a 4-5 out of 10 in a split moment. And, you know, certainly when it happens very end of the game and it's costly like that, it's a real tough one for him. And doesn't help in the narrative that is surrounding Chelsea goalkeepers. We spoke about it far too much this season, where I do wonder how much of a part that has to play on the goalkeepers playing, because it is ever present, it feels like, and it's gaining momentum, gaining traction. And again, I think people know my thoughts on it. I think a lot of it is very harsh.
That said, however, I mean, Enzo Maresca has reaffirmed his stance that Jorgensen will be the number one or continue to be the number one moving forward. We talk a lot about goalkeepers coming in on the front foot, and that was the case with Jorgensen, with the feeling, the perception towards Sanchez being so low, being on the floor, basically, well, in fact, like 100 miles below, at the Earth's core is where the narrative, the feeling was towards Sanchez. But Jorgensen has come in on the front foot. You just feel like perhaps he hasn't taken real advantage of that yet.
I guess you could argue that. I think there's also an argument to say, I think the narrative, it's not just around Sanchez. It does feel like it's around Chelsea goalkeepers. You know, you sometimes find that where it seems like almost set in stone from a media point of view, from a pundit point of view, that Chelsea need a goalie. And again, the bit that maybe isn't taken into account is the fact that playing in goal for Chelsea is arguably one of the most difficult roles to play, in that, you know, you could give examples of other teams in the Premier League where the goalkeeping position is that much simpler. They're not as advanced as they have to be playing for Chelsea. They're not having to play the type of football in terms of, you know, playing into the six, chipping out to fullbacks, wingers, you know, taking high risk to keep possession of the ball. So it is, I would argue, one of the most difficult positions for a goalkeeper. Now, you know, you could look at, obviously, the goalkeepers that maybe have got that CV, that are rated that bit higher, you could argue, your Alissons, Edisons, etc. I'd be really curious to know how they did in that role, because I do think the way that they're having to play, and I get it in terms of the way they want the team to play, I do think it is one of the toughest positions. Now, the bit that hasn't helped is the fact that, of course, there's so much focus when it comes to the media on unforced errors, and that's effectively all they're looking at. They're not necessarily looking at how proactive or what they're actually offering the team in terms of the rest of their game. It is sole focus on unforced errors, and unfortunately for both Jorgensen and Sanchez, there have been a few of them this season, which again, there's going to be more chance of that, given that, you know, I think until recently Sanchez had made the most saves in the league, which is crazy thinking that they're a top four, top five team. So there is that much more that they're having to do as opposed to some of the other teams, so naturally law of averages is going to be more errors.
Over to Goodison Park, Everton 2, Manchester United 2. And just a couple of questions on Andre Onana. One for the second goal scored by Abdoulaye Doucouré, and for the penalty that was eventually overturned by VAR.
Yeah, well, I think for the goal, he's obviously made the parry. It's a tricky one because you kind of set in that position where they're 4 or 5 yards from you. You expect them to smash it in, so you're setting for a reaction save. Now, in the end, the ball actually doesn't come maybe as strong towards him as he thinks it will. He decides to parry, which, yeah, I don't think that's the bad decision in that moment. He isn't necessarily able to parry it where he'd want to parry it, whether that's wide, whether that's over. So parries it up in the air. Then he has that horrible moment where he gets up and realizes or decides, can I get the second ball? You can just see that moment of hesitation where he doesn't move back. He doesn't move towards the ball, kind of gets caught a little bit. And in that moment, it makes it almost impossible to then save the next ball. Now, again, perfect world, that first parry, he might have been able to manufacture it and get it out wide or get it over the bar. Isn't able to do that. And then the question is just, can he come for that second one? Now, I don't know if he can. I think the move there would have been then to drop that little bit quicker. Now, he still might not save it, but at least it would have given him a chance to save it or to come for that second ball. And I don't think he had enough time to come for that second ball. So in the end, it kind of is what it is. It's one where, you know, he's left in that position and doesn't really have much of a chance for the follow-up.
St. James's Park, Newcastle 4, Nottingham Forest 3. And Nick Pope back in for Newcastle. He's been in the squad for about a month, but earned his first start since early December after that heavy defeat to Man City last week. They won the game, but the opening goal of the game was scored by Callum Hudson-Odoi. And question marks on Pope at half-time for his positioning on that opening goal.
Yeah, and yeah, when you look at it in isolation from where the strucks, where the shot is struck from and where he is positioned, it doesn't look great in that moment. However, I've seen a few goals like this. And again, I think it's just worth pointing out that you take your position according to what's going on around you. Now, in that moment where the player's coming inside, as far as he's concerned, the near post is covered. You've got the defender there. So he's taken up a slightly false position, but I don't necessarily disagree with the position because I think in that moment, the chances are that, yeah, if the 2-3 yards to your right hand side are covered, then your optimum position does become slightly different than, you know, if it was a straight shot and there was nobody in the way. So I think with that being the case, I understand why he's taken the position. Of course, once it goes, I think, through the player's legs or just to the side of the player, I think it might be Dan Burn maybe, he makes a move which actually doesn't help Pope because in the end, all he ends up doing really is blocking the middle of the goal. Now, it's tough for the defender because he won't know that in that moment. He is just trying to defend the ball. And of course, he's kind of lunged towards it, thinking that would give him the best chance of doing that. It's a really good finish from the player, reversing it back in the corner. At that point, of course, Pope is you know, massively out of position. But again, I do understand why Pope's taken the position that he has at that particular moment.
There was a penalty scored in that game from Alexander Isak. Matt Sells came very close to saving this. On one hand, it was good to watch because you thought, oh, he's nearly done him there. He's nearly read what he was going to do and made a really good save. On the other hand, it was not that pleasurable to watch. It was actually quite funny just seeing Sells just kind of get a paw to the ball but fall back in his net, a bit like a crumpled heap, really.
Yeah, well, it was a difficult one because you could see that he started to go to his right, and obviously the player, and this is a bit that, you know, my thoughts on penalties, I don't agree with the fact that this taken could do whatever they want to do, and the pause just before, you see Sells starts to go, which is why the player then goes down the middle. Sells actually does really well because he's off balance to even get back, but he's never really able to get enough on it or get a big enough hand to it to then get it over the bar. Of course, had he just have stood still, and this would be the argument, well, if he just stands still, he just catches that. But then if he stands still, the striker doesn't do what he does. He'd whip it into the corner. So the fact that he went is why the ball went down the middle. It's then how quickly can he get himself up and try and make the save. And he just didn't have enough time. And as you say, he was so close, though. He kind of went, came back, just about got a hand to it. But he's always having to go backwards and can only parry it into the top of the net, which was unfortunate. But yeah, again, it's so heavily weighted in the taker's favour. And the moment he starts to move, it just makes it so difficult.
Bit of technical analysis here now, Richard. Southampton 0, Brighton 4. I'd like to talk to you about the dinker. It's a goal scored by Joao Pedro and Kaoru Mitoma. How, as a goalkeeper, do you combat that? Because it's very difficult, right? We've seen Aaron Ramsdale concede 2. Both times he's held his position as long as he possibly can. But the classic dinker, is there a way, as a goalkeeper, you can try and combat that?
Well, there's different arguments. I think that some goalkeeper coaches I know are very, very keen on the idea of actually just staying that bit deeper and just waiting and waiting and waiting. But of course, the player then advances more and more, and sometimes it can be a very simple finish to then slot it in the corner. Aaron Ramsdale, it was a technique that I suppose I used to use, and I think goalkeepers, certainly we talk about the Peter Schmeichel spread or what have you.
Oh, Schmeichel!
Back in the day, that was very much, you kind of wait for that moment, try and get as close as you can, the point of impact. If you can make a big enough shape, then you give yourself a good chance of making the save. Now, 10, 15 years ago, to be honest, you probably save 80, 90% doing what Ramsdale did, because at each moment the player's taken the shot, he is within a yard or so. And if you pause it at that moment, he is covering a lot of the goal. The only thing he's susceptible to is the dink. And look, this is where the quality of strikers has got that much more. And where you're probably seeing goalkeepers spread that little bit less is because they know there is that quality and they seem to do that finish so easily now. So I guess you could say the counter argument would be that you just stay on your feet that bit longer or just go into a long barrier technique and kind of stand up that bit longer. Don't commit yourself fully. But it's very difficult because at the same time, I think that, you know, having done what he did, if he isn't coming up against that quality, he's making a lot of saves using that technique. And I still like the fact that goalkeepers, and Ramsdale's brilliant for this in terms of how brave he is, fully committing and going, because again, that will impact what the striker does. So ultimately, you're not in control of these situations. There is only so much a goalkeeper can do. You choose your technique according to a situation. I don't know what the percentages suggest, whether it is better just to stand and allow them to take the shot, or whether it is better to go and throw yourself and make yourself as big as you can. I think that neither are right or wrong. You know, unfortunately, in this situation, he came up against a striker who just had that little bit too much quality.
And finally, in the Premier League, can we talk about something we tend to chuckle about normally when it comes to goalkeepers? And that is a severe lack of pace, not demonstrated on this occasion, however, by David Raya, who burned James Ward-Prowse in injury time in that defeat for Arsenal against West Ham at the Emirates, subsequently ending their title hopes pretty much. But he'd come up for a corner, Raya, and raced back, overtook James Ward-Prowse, then pulled off a sumptuous back heel before regaining possession for his team. It was incredible to watch.
Lovely little Cruyff turn, rapid. Well, look, do you know what? I think that, you know, goalkeepers sprinting, David Raya will be amongst those that you feel he probably could play as a centre midfielder, you know, maybe not in the Premier League, but at a decent level, you know, in terms of how
good he is. Stretch.
Yeah. Bit of a stretch. But, you know, he could. And the way he moves more like an outfield player in that, you know, look, we spoke a lot about his movement and how fluid he is and, you know, being the shape and size he is, so athletic, so powerful. And actually, we see it in this. And actually, that is something that goalkeepers do train on a lot. Normally, it's over 5-10 yards, you know, being quick off your line, quick to close the space. But this is an example where it is more. And actually, you see just how quick he is. And again, he's got the awareness of mind to then do a Cruyff turn, keep possession of the ball. Like, it's brilliant, brilliant play. I would say brilliant goalkeeping, but hasn't got a lot to do with goalkeeping. But yeah, in this moment, again, we spoke about him a lot in terms of his quality on the ball and the fact that he's maybe a little bit different to a lot of how goalkeepers are in terms of shape, size, and certainly showed that here.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
It is the EFL overview where there were going to be 3 of the best from the Championship, but now there are 4 after last night's game between Sheffield United and Leeds. So 1 goalkeeper making a top save on the losing side, 2 goalkeepers making top saves on the winning side, and then you have Ian Melier. So starting with Jamie Cumming, having a good game at West Brom for Oxford. They went down 2-0 to the Baggies, but that did not deter Cumming from denying Alex Mowat a second goal of the game in the second half. He flew to his left to parry over the venomous effort from around 25 yards. That is, however, 3 defeats in 4 with no goals scored for the Ewes. Derby v Millwall and Lucas Jensen doing very well to parry Matt Clark's header onto the bar, then to grab the rebound after it cannoned off his own man. That was at 0-0, where at the other end, Jacob Zetterstrom had saved Josh Coburn's penalty. It looked as though a first valuable point was on its way for John Eustace as Derby boss, but not to be, with the away side grabbing a late, late winner. His old club, that's Eustace, crumbled. Blackburn crumbled at the Liberty Stadium, where 3 points were on their way for Swansea interim boss Alan Sheehan. Lawrence Figueroa with early saves to ensure Andreas Weimann didn't put the visitors ahead. And the curious case of Ian Melier continues. So a real case of Jekyll and Hyde on commentary for this game between Sheffield United and Leeds last night. So Melier spilled an early cross. He's then mistimed a punch from a corner, although you might argue he was impeded in the process. He's then made an incredible save. That's cannoned off the bar. Tyrese Campbell has followed it up. That's hit the post. It's come back to Melier, who's unfortunately patted it into his own net. The commentary team have lost their heads when this has happened. The unlikeliest of saviours, however, came in the form of Michael Brown. Who'd have thought it? That's the ex-Sheffield United, Man City, Leeds, Fulham, Tottenham midfielder Michael Brown, who looked at the goal again and showed reasoning. He showed understanding and some sympathy with Melier, who, it must be said, had a very good game thereafter.
Yeah. By the way, the save he made onto the bar is phenomenal. And it's, again, as you say, it was only, I think, when they looked back at it and they realised he got a touch to that. And then they actually saw what happened thereafter. Like, of course, doesn't look good and it's the own goal. You look at it come off the bar. You had a couple of moments before that, which we'll touch on. But yeah, the save onto the bar. And then it's more the fact that when he's trying to recover as quick as he can, it is a slip with the ball's coming back towards him. I don't really know how he parries it to safety. He might be able to stop it pretty much on the line. Chances are then it gets followed up anyway. But he's just in a really unfortunate position and it is just one of those things. But I thought the save onto the bar was excellent. As you say, and we speak a lot about the narrative, but there is a narrative that surrounds him as well as Leeds are doing. At the moment, there is that. And where he had those couple of moments early in the game, it then gives the commentators that opportunity to get on him that bit more, where, again, the decision-making is positive. He is coming for crosses. He's not hiding. He could easily hide and stay on his line and not put himself in those situations. But he's trying to be proactive. He is trying to come for the crosses. And he does end up getting the first one, albeit at the second attempt. But even that, you know, a lot of goalkeeper coaches will look at that and see it as being very positive. The fact that he's come, he has found a way to claim it. The punch, personally, I think he's fouled. Of course I do, but I do think he's fouled. Great save onto the bar. Like you say, very good thereafter. On the whole, it is a positive performance. However, yeah, in terms of commentary and in terms of the narrative that surrounds him, when there is anything that happens that maybe not in the way that he'd want it to happen, then, of course, the commentators are getting on him that bit. But, you know, certainly from his point of view, that the team are flying. I think he's in a good space. He's kind of had one or two moments this season, but I think on the whole, he's in a good space and certainly in a good space going into the back end of the season. And you mentioned a couple of the other performances there. Lawrence Figueroa, as you mentioned, very, very good. You know, tough for him, tough for the team recently. He certainly kept his levels high. I thought he made a couple of crucial saves in this one. Jamie Cumming, another good example in a team that are struggling, but his levels have been so high the whole season. The top hand save he makes here, if you haven't seen it, do get yourself online and see that, because it's a brilliant save from distance, going right in the top corner, but so explosive up to his left hand side. Top hand save. Love the save from Michael Cooper at the other end. But if anything, we talk again about narrative, where there's a really positive narrative that surrounds Michael Cooper, and rightly so, because he's had a very, very good season for Sheffield United. But the way that this save is described is maybe that bit more positive than it might be if it was a Ilan Melier, you could argue. But it is an excellent save, moves his feet well. Again, very similar to the coming save in terms of getting himself up there, top hand, explosive. And Jacob Zetterstrom really felt for him, because I thought he was fantastic throughout the game. And as we've seen on so many occasions with Derby this season, where he's making save after save. But again, if you're in a team that are struggling to score, it's always going to be difficult.
Yeah, it was interesting on Cooper, actually. Like you say, very good goalkeeper. Want to hear good things about him. But I thought it was really evident last night in that contrast in the narrative and just the way that he's perceived by onlookers, and in this case commentators, in this case Andy Hinchcliffe, who for that particular save, he said, any other goalkeeper and that's going in. Any other goalkeeper in the world is not safe. Only Michael Cooper is saving that shot, apparently, from Willy Nonto. We also found a new term for the glossary. I don't know whether you noticed this one, and it was said twice, I think, by Hinchcliffe and I think by Joby McEnough at half time as well, that Melier wasn't in control of his arms. That's a new one. Not in control of his arms.
I mean, that's frustrating if you're a goalkeeper. You know, it's I'd argue it's quite an important thing to have control of. But no, look, and again, this is where, you know, different shape sizes. Like Melier, I'd argue now, there's a lot of goalkeepers that we're seeing with this shape. You go back, again, 15, 20 years, and it was a very different shape that you'd see a goalkeeper being. And, you know, you'd argue, obviously always quite tall, but maybe a bit stockier. Whereas now we are seeing the tall, lean Courtois, Beadle, Melier, kind of that look where it's 6'6", 6'7". But again, you can move quickly. Not necessarily bulky, but very, very quick in your movements, very flexible. Again, we see some incredible saves with goalkeepers that have this type of physique. But it doesn't always necessarily look the most trying to think of the word I'm looking for, but it can look a bit ungainly. That's probably the word I'm looking for, where, of course, being that shape size, it's not always going to look as coordinated as a David Raya because of the shape size. But again, you could argue there's certain positives that come with having that kind of shape, and certainly that's why you're seeing a lot of the top clubs now are looking for younger goalkeepers of that type of shape and building that real core strength power. But because, of course, if you've got that extra reach and that speed of movement, then in theory you are going to make that many more saves.
Into League One, where there are three more of the best. Ryan Allsop continuing to deliver an exhibition in distribution for Birmingham week in, week out, but also two key saves in a goalless draw at Reading. Lewis Wing and Chim Campbell both denied at the Medeski, as was Carl Wootton at the Abbey Stadium, twice kept out by Nathan Bishop on loan at Cambridge from Sunderland. Smart stops in either half from him. And the same goes to Murphy Cooper. His first stop in a win for Stevenage at Shrewsbury, very similar actually to Bishop's first stop, that huge jump, spread and, you know, barrier to combat the lob with a striker clean through, and another one-on-one when facing up George Lloyd, also clean through, also kept out by Cooper.
Yeah, really good performance from Murphy Cooper again. As you say, a couple of big saves in this, both similar in certain ways in terms of closing the space, making himself very big. I know we spoke about Ramsdale earlier, and again, you are always reliant to an extent on the quality that you're facing. But I think Murphy's read both of these situations very, very well. Got himself to the edge of the box and almost a big star spread for the first one. Second one, just got himself to within a yard or two. Point of execution, I thought his shape was very, very good, and certainly another very positive performance from him. Nathan Bishop, again, big win for them. Of course, Neil Harris back in charge at Cambridge, and massive win for them, and a big save this under the crossbar, really sharp, good tip over. And Ryan Allsop, I feel like we're talking about him every week, but it's just phenomenal. Some of the distribution, I know we talk a lot about your Edisons, etc., but we have to have him in that same category. And certainly the way in which Birmingham play, he just fits them perfectly. It makes it so difficult for opposing teams in that, you know, he can play through, he can play over. He mixes things up so well, his knowledge of the game and the execution. Certainly when it comes to the balls now over the top, where he draws the teams in, he's able to then release the ball over the top. The number of assists he could have had this season, yeah, another very, very good performance.
And in League Two, where it was all about the penalties. So there were two not given involving Gabe Breeze of Carlisle and Owen Goodman of AFC Wimbledon. We'll start with these. So Breeze being one of those where the strikers run onto a through ball. In this case, it's Elliot Nevitt of Gillingham. Nevitt's got there first, but because Breeze has closed the space, all Nevitt can do is basically touch it to one side of him, but without actually rounding him, if you know what I mean. He's touched it one side and then it has to run round the other side of the goalkeeper. Breeze, however, has then made contact, meaning Nevitt can't run the other side to reach the loose ball. Down he goes, no pen given. It's ended 0-0. Goodman's is more straightforward. It was one apiece between Colchester and AFC Wimbledon. And it's one of those classic loose balls that Lyle Taylor's got to just before him. The goalkeeper dives at the striker's feet. Taylor goes down, no pen given. However, Taylor's booked for diving, which he actually accepted, which suggested that maybe he did dive. But I'm actually with the striker on this one, in that it's very difficult to not go down in that scenario, especially when the goalkeeper dives at your feet, even if he quickly pulls his arms away at the very last millisecond. So I feel for Taylor on that one. Perhaps not a stonewaller, but the first one for me, that's cast iron. That's a pen.
Yeah, look, I think the second one, the Goodman one, it's tricky because, again, I get it from a striker's point of view. Similarly, from a goalkeeper's point of view, where you close the space and at the last minute you pull out, if you're not then making contact, you know, it's different if you fully commit, and we've seen a lot recently, fully commit. The striker does get there first, drags their feet, hits the hands, goes over. I think the goalkeepers now accept that that is a penalty. But I do think that when you get there and you do make the action like Goodman did, where it's very obvious that he's then thrown everything back, hasn't touched the player, I get from the player's point of view that by that point, you know, you're almost semi-committed to going down. But I still don't think that's a penalty, because I think that, you know, the goalkeeper's kind of made the decision to come, but has made the decision just in time to pull out and hasn't made contact. I don't think that can be a penalty from a goalkeeper's point of view. I think, like you say, the Breeze one is slightly different in that he's maybe that little bit too close and ultimately the player has to go over him. So I think he wouldn't have been overly surprised if that was given. And yet at the same time, I'm delighted that it wasn't.
Okay, and elsewhere, that draw between Carlisle and Gillingham remained as such because of a brilliant late save from Glenn Morris. Stephen Wynn's header pushed wide on 87 minutes. It's a toss-up between two save of the weekend contenders. Jamie Jones at Port Vale. So Salford lost the game 2-1, but at 0-0, Jones leapt to his left to palm Antoine Hackford's header away. Philip Marshall diving to his right as Crewe were holding on to a one-goal lead against Barrow. Aaron Presley's header bashed away by the Aston Villa lonely as he raced from one post to the other. Crewe went on to win 3-0. And then we have two of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper, keeper.
The first involving another penalty. This one was given. Ryan Boot back in for Chesterfield. Hokey cokey keepers over there. Sadly giving away the only goal of the game in a defeat to Swindon. So he's taken a touch from a back pass. And then as he's gone to whack the ball clear, the striker's nicked in and rather than whacking the ball, Boot has whacked the striker. And Newport's Nick Townsend. So, yeah, this was an interesting sequence of events here. For the second in a 3-0 defeat to Cheltenham, he's done well to intercept a speculative ball over the top. Hasn't quite connected with a header outside the box. It's ended up being more of a downward header. He's then doubled down and attempted a wild swing to clear the danger. Gets there before the Cheltenham player, but only tickles it a yard or so. It's fallen to a teammate, so Townsend kind of thinks he's half in the clear and begins making his way back to goal. They're about 30 yards out by this point. That teammate, however, miscontrols it on his chest. He's dispossessed by Ethan Williams. Townsend's watching all of this unfold while trying to run back. Williams duly lobs him from those aforementioned 30 yards.
Yeah, well, we'll start with the saves because you mentioned three saves there and they're all really, really good saves. Glenn Morris low to his right. I thought it was excellent. Really sharp, full stretch, gets just about enough of a hand on it to get it out of danger. Jamie Jones, full stretch to his left, moves across the goal really well here. Again, really sharp, big strong hand, parries into a good area. And Marshall as well, another top save. Again, just really powerful, getting to his right hand side, scrambles across his line, gets down there. So we'll start on the positive, three big saves. And then I feel really sorry for both Townsend and Boot. I think Boot, firstly, it's the fact the pass back, it's a really poor pass back. And it's tough because ideally you go first time, but I don't think the ball was ever at a place or in a position where he could have just cleared. It would have been really scrappy in doing so. So he's tried to take the touch, which is understandable, but wasn't able to get to the second ball and is what it is. And then similarly with Townsend, he has to keep chasing. Once he's made the positive decision, gets the first one, gets the second one, gets the third one, and you're just hoping on a bit of luck because it is positive, proactive goalkeeping. And effectively, you've manipulated one way or another. You've managed to get the ball to near enough the halfway line with your actions. And again, you're just hoping that there's someone either covering for you, that you can gain possession of the ball. And he's never really got enough time to get himself back. And it's that horrible moment. Lovely finish, has to be said. But that horrible moment, he's sprinting back towards goal, but he never really had enough time to get there. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, well, unfortunately, I do have my phone today, which means I'll be doing this. That's right, it's time for Clean Sheet Club. We start in the Premier League. Mark Flecken, five alive. Jose Sarr, cards or juice. Alphonse Areola, tally doubled. Dean Henderson, four away, two nils in six, and 2-2-1s at home. Bart Verbruggen, feeling sixy. Alisson, etched into the championship. James Trafford over to Chief Keef. Oh,
12 million. It's just me and 12 children.
Lucas Jensen, Viking blank. Ivor Pandor, four so far. Lawrence Vigourou, Kubakan. Joe Wildsmith on the board for 24-25. Egil Selvik, tally doubled, mark two. And into League One, Joel Pereira, beautiful. Ryan Allsop, hat-trick. Joe Gauchy, tally-doubled, mark 3. Nathan Bishop on the ball for 24-25, mark 2. Will Mannion, first since early October. Jed Steer on the board, 24-25, mark 3. Max Crocombe, 2 on the 1-0 spin. Murphy Cooper, topping League 1. Will Norris, unbeaten chairboy. Sam Tickle, 12 in total. And into League 2, Philip Marshall, back-to-back. Tommy Simpkin, first since sounding the siren at the end of December. Sam Walker, 1 away from a siren. Grant Smith, hat-trick, mark 2. Gabriel Breeze, 0-0-0-0. Glenn Morris, 0-0-0-0. Joe Day, blank from Brighton. And Connor Ripley, off the mark for the Robins.
Very good, Richard. Very good. Interestingly from that, Three goalkeepers at the weekend made their first clean sheets of the season, so we're still seeing accounts opened at this stage of the campaign.
Is that right? Well, there you go. And I take it you're going to do the table now. I reckon I can guess who is top of that table.
Well, obviously, but I've added a little layer because I knew that you'd give that silly remark. So, yes, top of the table, James Trafford with 24 in 33. Under him, Ian Melier, 20 in 34. Michael Cooper, 17 in 32. He's joined by Owen Goodman, also 17 in 32. And Murphy Cooper with 15 in 29. That is the top five. But with James Trafford now on 24, he has equaled the highest we've ever had in Clean Sheet Club come the end of the season. So the Clean Sheet Club King of 2022-23 was Lawrence Rigourou with 24 clean sheets. The inaugural Clean Sheet Club with Vaslav Hladký, he bagged 22. Liam Roberts the season after with 21. And Joe Wildsmith last season with 21, I believe, as well. So Rigourou with 24 a couple of seasons ago. James Trafford already has that.
Incredible. And we've still got so long to go. Can he get to 30? That's the question. Can he just complete the season? And what's the guy's name? JJ, what is it that's going to come out of retirement?
That's it. Yeah.
Let's see if that can happen. I mean, I'm not writing it off at the moment.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers.
Wait.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.